The chair calls the second meeting of the ALA Council to order. Oh, sorry. I have a gavel today. We will follow the same rules that were approved during the ALA Council 1 meeting. Your voting record, it's fine to continue to pick up documents, but please hold down conversation because we are now in session. Your voting record is at your place. You should have an ivory card for this morning's meeting. If you want to speak at this meeting, please go to a microphone, wait for recognition, then give your name and indicate if you are a division counselor, a chapter counselor, a counselor at large, or a roundtable counselor. You will be asked to raise one of your hands for all votes that are not adopted by general consent. Only if the vote seems close will I call for a standing vote. If you must leave before adjournment, please take your card to Lois Ann over at the projectionist table. A quorum for a council meeting is 75 councilors. I've been advised that we have well over 75 councilors present, and therefore we will have a quorum. The agenda, ALA Council Document Number 8.2, revised 1/22/12, 8:30 p.m., and all other documents issued since the last council meeting are available at the document pickup station in this room. Please note that when I introduce the ALA Honorary Membership Nomination Agenda item, I will ask if any councilor wishes to debate the nomination. If any councilor so indicates, this item will be moved into closed session. The honorary membership discussion will begin at 12 noon or sooner to allow time for adequate discussion of the nomination. I want to repeat that. If any councilor wishes to debate the nomination, we will do so in closed session, so you must indicate that when we get to that point. Comments in support of a nomination do not need to be made in closed session. Under the 24-hour rule, we have received the following resolutions to add under the new business. Resolution on publisher... Sorry, okay. Okay, that resolution, the mover has asked to move it to Council 3. So it will come to you, but it will come to you at Council 3. Do you have any other new business to add at this time? Are there any objections to the agenda? Hearing no objections, the chair declares the agenda adopted. The chair now refers you to ALA Council Document Number 13 and calls on ALA Treasurer James G. Neal to present his report. Jim?
Good morning. I'm pleased to provide the Midwinter Treasurer's Report to Council. I will cover the following topics. I want to review in some detail the final fiscal year 11 financial results, remind you of the report from BARC on the fiscal year 12 budget adjustments, talk about some of the issues we're building into our planning for the fiscal 13 and future budget plans of the association, talk a little bit about new business development strategies, report to you on the Neil Schumann acquisition, and finally, there is an action item for council, which is our routine approval of the programmatic priorities. We are looking at the audited financial statements for fiscal year 11. These are the actual results. We always look at this at two levels, the overall ALA level, and then we focus our attention down to the parts of the association, the general fund, the divisions, and the roundtables. And here you can see a comparison between our overall results between 2010 and 2011, where we had in 2011 a general shortfall of $160,377. And you can see the comparisons in the revenue and expense categories between the 2 years. Next slide, please. ALA total revenues, not surprisingly, continues to rely quite heavily on dues. We had a modest shortfall in dues of about $163,000 that continues to be largely explained by organizational dues reductions. Publishing had a good year, a growth of about $500,000. Meetings and conferences is always sensitive to the locations of our meetings, and here we had a reduction of about $2.6 million. And you can see the other categories. The bottom line is that on the revenue side, we had $5.9 million less in revenue comparison 2010 and 2011. I thought it was very useful to look at our revenue stream over a 10-year period, and here you have a graph which demonstrates that we had a generally positive direction up until 2008, and when the economic issues began to confront us and everyone else, we've had a general decline in revenues since 2008. On the expense side, again, this is not surprising and consistent with our historical pattern in terms of the continuing centrality of payroll to our expense category. But you can see the full range of other expenses we have, particularly the meetings and conferences and the publications area. Operating includes all of the administrative areas, including the benefits category. Employee benefits category. So the expenses also were down close to $3.5 million. And you can see the comparison between the 2 years. And if you overlaid these graphs, the ALA expenses over the last 10 years with the revenue, you can see that these have remained generally in alignment with each other. That is, we have been willing and able as an association to make the adjustments on our expense side to reflect the revenue streams that we are actually experiencing. Another view is of our overall assets and liabilities, and here you see that between 2010 and 2011, we had about a $500,000 increase in our position, in our asset liability position. And I think it's important to understand what defines an ALA asset. Here you can see we have a significant cash and investments at about $18 million, an increase of a $500,000. And our long-term investment, which was reported on earlier at council information session, a $2.5 million increase. And you can see the various categories which define the assets of the association. Turning to the next slide, you can see the liabilities, what we owe, so to speak, and the normal categories. Deferred revenue is an interesting category. We receive your membership payments, we receive your registration, and the way we account for that is to project it out over a period of time. It's money owed, if you will, to you based on the money that you've given. So it's a deferred revenue based on the projected revenue that we will be receiving. And long-term debt relates to our property that we will continue to have to pay off on. So again, it's a general balance, as you see, on a continuing basis from year to year in terms of our assets and liability, with some growth in our cash and our investment category. The other lens, an important lens for council to look through, is our general fund. And here you can see in 2011, we had a net revenue shortfall of $437,000. I want to probe a little bit more into why that is the case. Again, we in the general fund, if we overlay our overall revenue picture with our expense picture, you can see the pattern which we have followed since 2001, and we have generally been able to keep those categories in alignment. You can see in 2011 the small dip of our revenue below our expenses, and we'll explain that now. On the revenue side, you can see the basic categories which align with the overall ALA a revenue situation, a small decline in our dues, a decline in our meetings and conferences, and that is always sensitive to the location. And also remember the consolidation which is taking place in the industries that exhibit, in the companies that exhibit at ALA, and that has had some impact as well on our meeting and conference revenue. And you can see there the overall bottom line is that our revenues in the general fund declined $378,000. And here you have a snapshot of what that general fund pattern has looked like since 2001. An important part of our overall revenue is what the annual conference contributes to our budget. The top line represents the net revenue. The bottom line applies to when that net revenue is subject to the overhead rate. We do apply the overhead rate, which is determined each year, to the revenue that we receive from our conferences. And here you can see that the revenue has generally been steady over that five-year, six-year period, but there has been a somewhat decline during that period in terms of the contribution margin, if you will, after the application of that overhead rate. Midwinter suggests a very interesting, different picture. You can see what the net revenue pattern has been, a decline to 20.7% in 2011, and you can see the actual contribution margin after we've applied the overhead rate is falling below below zero. These are important considerations in terms of thinking about our long-term revenue strategies for ALA, given these patterns with midwinter and annual meetings. In addition to meetings and conferences, we do apply that overhead rate to publishing. And you can see here that the publishing pattern has pretty much followed the same pattern as meetings and conferences. This is the net margins produced by both our publishing program and by our meetings and conferences program in the general fund. The picture I'm hoping that you're taking away is that in our core business areas, conferences, publishing, membership, we have had some erosion in revenue over a period of the last decade. What does this income pay for? That's important to understand as well. The general fund supports the communications program of ALA. All the membership offices that we rely on, the Washington office, the Office of Diversity, the Office of Intellectual Freedom, and many other organizations that we work with in the ALA structure, the work of the executive office, and the general administrative costs. So we have a $9.3 million bill in 2011, which is in the member support services area, and we need to draw revenue from those sources, from those revenue-producing sources, in order to pay for that. You can see there was a change in the total cost of about $282,000. Where do we spend our money in the general fund? Again, payroll, meetings and conferences, publications, which are hopefully offset by revenue. And you can see here that our expenses between 2010 and 2011 were generally flat. And again, the expense category for the general fund follows the pattern of the overall ALA operations and the actual revenues that we received during this period. So again, the ability of the general fund units to accommodate the decline in revenues since 2008. We did make some adjustments in our budget in 2011, recognizing these trends. You can see, and I've reported this to you before, you can see the expense reductions that we did implement in the various categories, personnel, publishing, building and technology, governance. We did have some funds in our benefits benefits area that we were able to offset some of these expenses on a one-time basis, but we did end up the year with a shortfall of $154,000. The board had authorized the use of reserve funds at a higher number, but we were able to reduce our cost, and we drew $154,000 out of board reserves to cover the deficit. The divisions are also another important part of the organization's budgetary process. And here you can see the overall revenue and expense condition. Remember, in the division budgets, we have the variance from year to year in terms of two national conferences versus one national conference, and that is always reflected in these numbers. So that is part of the explanation for the decline in net revenue as we move from 2010 and to 2011. Not surprisingly, divisions enjoy the same primary sources of revenue that the rest of the association does. Dues, publishing, meetings, and conferences. And here you can see that moving from 2010 to 2011, the revenue decline was just over $2 million. And on the expense category, a similar pattern. and the ability of the divisions to manage their budgets effectively in alignment with those revenue streams that they were experiencing. So both on the ALA general side and on the division side, we see a responsive organization which is accommodating the decline in revenues through appropriate adjustments in expenses. It's important to always keep in mind that part of the divisional budgets is the application of the overhead rate to their meetings and conference revenue and to their publications revenue. And here you can see division by division the actual payments that were made on overhead, in this case 2010, because it's done on a year out basis. So this is the latest full snapshot that we have. And you can see we also build into this accounting the division, a small division support that we provide, in this case, Ascola and Alta. But you can see the overall pattern, and you can see that there are costs absorbed by the general fund related to the work of the divisions. But the overhead pay rate is reflected in that. Roundtables also have a very important role to play in the programmatic work of the organization, and here you can see the overall pattern between revenues and expenses within the roundtables. They have been able over a number of years to produce significant net revenue, which is part of their short-term asset balance that they have available to use for programs and projects. As reported, our endowment fund had experienced some significant growth up until August, and you can see that here, where we moved from $31.2 million to $33.2 million, a growth of about $2 million. The endowment trustees reported the decline over the fall, but we also know that during January we've had some growth in that, our investments due to the market performance. I wanted to echo some of the points made by the BARC report concerning our 2012 final budget. As you know, the budget planning process is done over an extended period of time. And realizing what we were going through for fiscal year 11, we recognized we needed to make some adjustments in our budget for that we had approved for fiscal year 12. And you can see the general fund and the divisions went through a rigorous evaluation of their budgets, and we projected to reduce our budget ceiling for the general fund by $750,000, and the divisions made a similar adjustment of just over $200,000. And in the general fund, you can see where those budgeted changes were made. We actually did take about $1 million out of the budget, and as Clara reported in her BARC report, we're holding $250,000 as a reserve fund to deal with contingencies as we move through the fiscal year 12 budget process. We also are now beginning the fiscal year 13 budget planning. We know that on a national level, library budgets are lagging the economic recovery. We don't always have the best political environment in Washington, nor in our states and at the local level, and we need to recognize that not only in our library planning, but also in our association work. We do have one less division national conference in this fiscal year 13, and that generally translates into about $500,000 impact on the general budget, the ALA general fund, and we always have to make sure that we leverage our assets to support our strategic priorities. I always argue if you really want to see what a strategic plan of any organization is you look at its budget. That tells you what they think is really important. There are a lot of things we need to factor in long term. We're operating under strategic priorities of the 2015 plan. We know we have to invest in new technology, new systems and services. We're in the process now, for example, of implementing a new financial management system. We have to think about that migration from print to electronic distribution of our work and looking at new business models for making that content available to our members and around the world. Membership, particularly organizational and divisional, needs to be addressed, and we're looking at a number of strategies under a new director of membership services. The payout policy, the spending policy that we adopted here as council, 8.5.1, which regularized the payout from our endowment, currently at 4% of principal, has given us some additional funds to work with and has neutralized some of the problems we've had with revenue shortfall. We're trying to figure out new ways to make our products and our services more available around the world. And as a result, we've put a lot of attention in recent years on the new products and services that we can provide. That new business development area is increasingly important. All parts of the organization are looking at electronic publishing as an important part, not only of getting our content out in more effective and sophisticated ways, but looking at ways that might generate additional revenue. The expanded publishing program, the creation of the Huron Street Press, which was referenced at our last council meeting, the acquisition of Neil Schumann. Many of the units of ALA are building out pretty sophisticated and substantive continuing education online programs, and that offers an opportunity also for some additional revenue. We recognize that ALA has a very important and positive brand around the world, and there may be opportunities for us to take the things we do and to build it out to an international market. We've benchmarked where the international community is consuming ALA's work in terms of registrations at conferences, membership, and acquisitions of our publications, so we have a good sense of where we are and how we might grow. The Huron Street Press is in many ways an example to try to take our work out to the public, to library users, by producing publications that would be of interest to them. We are looking at how we might link up with other organizations, and the Neil Schumann acquisition is an example of that. And we'll be launching at the summer conference an expanded and coordinated effort with the divisions, roundtables, and offices of ALA, a much more sophisticated and much more aggressive plan giving effort. These are all part of our revenue enhancement, part of our budget. We are continuing to take down our expenses, and I think there's a limit to which we can reduce our expenses when we begin, unless we begin to change the character of the organization and the quality of services we can provide to our members and to libraries and librarians and library workers around the United States and around the world. So let me turn our attention then to the Neil Schumann acquisition. The discussion of the acquisition of Neil Schumann Publishing by the American Library Association began about 2 years ago. It was a result of a conversation between Keith Fields and Pat Schumann. After a series of exchanges exploring the feasibility and desirability of advancing to a formal purchase agreement, in the early fall of 2011, ALA presented a set of terms to Neil Schumann, which allowed the process of research and negotiations to proceed. The executive board, in discussing this, saw a clear alignment with the mission and goals of the association, making expanded publications and educational opportunities more widely available to libraries, librarians, and library workers. The agreement on terms, which we reached early in the fall, enabled ALA access to the financial and legal records of Neil Schumann, and an extensive and rigorous process of due diligence proceeded. As a result of this investigation, we were able to evaluate the financial status of the business, to assess its contractual obligations, and to identify any issues that would be problematic to ALA. The due diligence review of Neil Schumann records confirmed the financial health of the company and the absence of any legal or other issues that would not allow ALA to proceed with negotiations. ALA then engaged an accounting firm with a strong history of providing business advice for these types of transactions. This firm carried out a detailed valuation of Neil Schumann Publishing based on its historical performance and on the in the context of future financial scenarios and potential. They presented us with three estimates of fair market value. The first estimate was called standard value. That is, if the company was purchased and run as a separate, for-profit, independent business in its present location in New York. That was not the plan for ALA. They also provided us with a second estimate, value with synergies, as they called it. That is, if the company was moved to Chicago and integrated with ALA Publishing as a separate imprint, but with the clear advantages of shared infrastructure, shared management, and shared staffing. That is, the integration of Neil Schumann as an imprint into the ALA Publishing operation in Chicago. The third valuation was value with synergies and zero tax. That is, a professional publishing program like ALA's that does not have the requirement for payment of taxes. That is, moving from a for-profit to a not-for-profit status, that is, this is related business income. Just like ALA Publishing operates under that umbrella, Neil Schuman would fall under that same umbrella. The results of this valuation study confirm that the purchase price in negotiation with Neil Schuman was in the appropriate range of the company's value. Throughout the period of these investigations, the leadership team in ALA Publishing developed an extraordinarily detailed business plan. The questions we sought to answer: can we demonstrate an expense revenue projection that would achieve a positive cash flow, a valuable and additive publishing potential and market share for ALA, and a positive contribution to ALA's finances? The business plan was based on very conservative projections about future sales prospects and price increases. Built into the business plan were certain assumptions about the Neil Schuman imprint under ALA. The ability of ALA to expand significantly the international markets for Neil Schuman products. The ability to expand electronic publishing capacity for current, retrospective, and future Neil Schuman content. And the ability to build out a growing array of derivative products such as webinars, e-learning, and workshops. All three which were not currently part of the Neil Schuman business plan. Significant international marketing, electronic publishing, and educational products. The business plan analysis was projected over a 10-year period, and the conclusion was that the expanded publishing program with Neil Schuman would provide significant financial support for member programs and services, contribute significant positive revenue to ALA with the completion of our payments for the purchase, and provide ALA with a valuable new asset going forward. We looked at a 100% scenario, that is, we looked at the business plan as it was outlined, that is, providing all of our assumptions were accurate over this 10-year period, but we also did an 80% success scenario that says if we were not as successful. We also did a 60% success scenario if we were significantly below our projections, and in all cases, 100, 80, and 60, the outcome of the business plan was positive for ALA. With the due diligence, the valuation study, and the business plan completed, we then turned to the negotiations with Neil Schuman owners. The question that I have received most frequently from members of council is the purchase price. After extended negotiations and with the unanimous support of BARC and the executive board, ALA purchased Neil Schuman Publishing for $7 million. We incurred transitional costs linked to such things as the office in New York, employee transitions, author royalty payments in the amount of approximately $350,000. The payment was carried out by drawing funds out of our short-term investments, our cash accounts, not out of the association endowment. We are currently working on the finalization of a bank loan that will enable us to return most of the withdrawal funds back into our short-term investments. We are pleased to find very favorable interest rates for this prospective loan. We estimate the loan will be paid back over a period of 5 to 7 years, using the net proceeds from the Neil Schuman imprint as part of ALA Publishing. I want to emphasize that throughout the entire process over the past 2 years, there was extensive internal consultation and participation. All individuals and groups involved were required to sign non-disclosure agreements. This included administrators in ALA Publishing, administrators in ALA Finance, the Finance and Audit Committee, the Budget Advisory and Review Committee, the New Business Development Advisory Committee, and the Executive Board. Many people across the association, staff, and member leaders were involved in this process. In addition, we worked with an outstanding team of external advisors. This included the accounting firm that carried out the valuation study, the association lawyers including an individual with extensive experience working with acquisitions and mergers in the publishing industry, and our association auditors. We had significant and extended external counsel throughout this entire process. What are the next steps? We must sustain and advance the Neil Schuman imprint as part of ALA Publishing. We must work on the transition and integration of operations and finances from New York to Chicago. We must work effectively with Neil Schuman authors and customers. We must complete the bank loan and begin the payments from the Neil Schuman net proceeds. I hope that I've answered many of your questions. In the context of flat or declining revenues at ALA in our core business areas, it is essential that we develop new, expanded, and appropriate sources of revenue. I personally have extensive experience working with new business development in libraries, professional associations, and not-for-profit companies. The acquisition of Neil Schuman, in my view, by ALA was carried out with rigor, professionalism, and integrity, and with a total commitment to improving the financial status of the association so that it can serve its members and libraries now and in the future. All of us, I think, are prepared to respond to any questions that you might have.
Are there any questions for Jim? Microphone number two.
Sue Camp, Counselor at Large. How has the institution of continuing membership affected our revenue stream?
Could you state that question again?
How does implementing the continuing membership affect our revenue stream? Because continuing members do not pay ALA dues.
Great. That's a very good question. For a number of years, we've been looking at the impact of the baby boomers, who constitute a significant portion of the profession and their retirement. As people retire, they become continuing members. If they've had 25 years of continuous membership, they then become, they no longer have to pay dues. I do sign a goodly number of letters congratulating people on achieving that status each month. Is Kathleen Bourdon here? I believe the figure at this point is that about 2,000 a year are going to be transitioning from full membership to continuing membership over the course of the next decade or so. So part of what you, if you look at the dues revenue that Jim talked about, the movement of people from a full membership to continuing membership has been one of the factors as to why dues has been it hasn't been growing at the rate that it had been growing. Other factors include the organizational membership, as Jim discussed, and then just in general, the economic climate in general. But that is something that we have incorporated into our plans and projections.
Thank you.
Microphone seven.
Hey, Maggie Farrell, ACRL. Counselor Jim, I want to commend the board for the Neil Schuman purchase and thinking about ways to diversify our revenue, particularly given the last statement on membership and how our economy is changing for open access revenues coming from conferences. So good job, and I hope the board will continue to investigate similar opportunities.
Thank you, Mom.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Oh, that's me. Marianne Hodel, Counselor at Large. Just a question. Who? What was the name of the external financial advisory firm that you referred to?
Come to the microphone, please.
Come to the microphone, Greg.
Greg Calloway, Chief Financial Officer for ALA.
The name of the firm was Blackman and Kallick, based out of Chicago.
Okay, thank you.
Microphone five.
Yufen Diana Wu, Counselor at Large. Thank you, Jim, for a very thoughtful and analytical report. I do want to bring to everybody's attention, that's a report on page number 12. The income revenue, from division from meeting and conference category is dropped by 35.6%. And we all know meeting and conferences provide a forum for members to exchange ideas. This is very alarming to me because...
Let me qualify that again. I did indicate in my report that we have to be cautious in looking at that number because the national conferences run by divisions vary from year to year. So in some years, there's two national conferences, and in another year, there's one national conference. And so the 35% decline that you see reflects the movement from two to one national conference. In 2012, that number will, that 35%, hopefully and prospectively, will go back up.
Great. I think that's a good answer. So if you have any record in terms of which divisions are doing better, which are struggling?
Finance and Audit Committee of the Board and BARC work very closely with the divisions. Several of the divisions have been able to diversify their revenue and have been able to produce opportunities for revenue growth outside of their membership dues and to build educational and publishing programs. Those divisions have tended to be more successful in terms of dealing with the economic climate. Several of the divisions have been able to build up fund balances over the years. This is not money that's in their endowment. This is positive fund balances that they retain in their short-term fund balances and which are accessible to them. And because of that, they've been able to insulate themselves against some of the shortfall in revenue during this economically challenged period and to continue to be healthy and to invest in new projects and programs. You see, I'm avoiding pointing a finger at any individual division. But overall, I have to say, I find the work of the divisions at ALA remarkably innovative, conscientious, and really focused on their budget situations. And we work very closely with them, particularly in the April budget planning period when we meet and talk with each of them in Chicago. And they do extremely impressive work managing resources under very difficult circumstances.
Microphone two.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. First, a comment. Not all retirees have been with ALA for 25 years, but I'm looking forward to the right retirees rate when I do my next membership. And in addition, as ALA has been innovated, we do have the retirees roundtable, which will continue to bring in revenue, and I believe its membership is fairly rapidly increasing, which is a very good sign.
Now, therefore, the plan giving effort.
Yeah, exactly.
We have lawyers and financial advisors ready outside to work with you.
Now, for a question.
Sure.
It struck me, you're moving the Neil Schuman office from New York to Chicago.
That's correct.
And from private hands to our hands.
That's correct.
So my question is, how many employees of Neil Schuman have been severed, how many transferred, and how many ALA staff are going to have to be added in Chicago?
Thank you, Elizabeth, for raising that question. As part of the business plan, we did look at that. ALA does not have the option of maintaining the operation in New York. That would have a significant impact on the feasibility and the viability of the acquisition. What we did was to negotiate what I think was a particularly generous arrangement with existing staff. All Neil Schuman employees, and there were seven FTEs, and there are seven FTEs at this point, were made ALA employees. Their accrued benefits were carried over, and everyone was given a 90-day contract. And in fact, we negotiated a severance package for each employee, which would be at the end of the 90 days, which is based on if they had been an ALA employee during the entire period that they worked at Neil Schumann. So what we have tried to do is to be secondarily, we were able to negotiate because of the size of Neil Schumann. Upon the dissolution of the company, the employees would have lost health insurance and not had the option of COBRA or a similar New York State plan. We were able to carry them over into ALA's health insurance policy, and they will be eligible for low-cost health insurance once the company is relocated. I think it is fair to say, because as I say, there's been a lot of interest in our part, that while the option of relocating to Chicago is something that we would happily extend, that in many instances, for a variety of reasons, people are not going to be able to make that transition. I would have to say that we are also currently in negotiations with some of the key individuals in Neil Schumann, and we're eager to see if we can work out a relationship where we would continue to be able to utilize their expertise, even if in fact it's not through Chicago. Our estimate at this point is that in the business plan, we would be adding five FTEs in Chicago. As Jim referenced, we would have some significant savings due to the consolidation of things like fulfillment. There's a warehouse in New Jersey that Neil Schumann uses. Those materials will be relocated to, I think, Pennsylvania is where we're working on at this point. Obviously, the financial accounting, auditing, and all of those things, HR, rent, would be no longer an issue. And we do have space in ALA for the new operation, which will be relocating to the third floor. And they'll be in proximity to the existing ALA Additions operation. And they will be maintained as a separate operation with a separate editorial focus. And we will continue certainly the focus of Neil Schumann as a business is decidedly different, very strong in the textbook market, very strong in the how-to. We saw those as very, very valuable. Part of our vision of ALA involves delivering increased value to individual libraries, to individual members, and to individual library employees, the kind of practical base of knowledge and the foundation for such things as continuing education and training was very attractive, because our goal is to, particularly given what's been happening with the dissolution of regional library systems and cutbacks at the state level, the need for staff in libraries to have access to high quality training at a low cost is something that we see as at this point very important and urgent, and this does then allow that enormous positive content to be able to brought in and then, as Jim said, deployed in order to better serve the library community.
Microphone 5.
Rodney Lippard, North Carolina Chapter Counselor. Thank you, Jim, for this report, and especially this statement on the Neil Schumann acquisition. It answered a lot of questions that I had and I've heard from others, and I'm wondering, will your statement be available?
Yes.
Great, because I think that those of us who represent chapters or divisions will have questions from our constituents, and I felt that this was a good way of balancing the need for transparency that's our culture today with the need for confidentiality in this.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I come from an older generation, so it's actually written out by hand. Thanks to the nuns with the rulers, I have great penmanship. So, and that was not an anti-Catholic comment. I'm a practicing. Yeah.
Microphone 4.
Don Rookwam, Illinois Chapter Counselor. Jim, could you talk a little bit about how active you're going to be in plan giving, and I mean, is this bequests, wills, trusts,
yes,
all that good stuff from
yes,
beyond the grave?
Right. Well, let me. We have currently 32 individuals who have made plan gifts to different parts of the association. recognizing that that has developed over time positively, but not in a coordinated way, we decided we very much wanted to build a different, much more aggressive strategy, if you will. So we are looking primarily at the at wills and bequests, obviously people who have 401Bs, life insurance policies. We're not going to implement in the short term ALA-based trusts, but we will work with lawyers and financial advisors to establish trusts outside of ALA in which ALA is named as the beneficiary. We are working over the course of the next 6 months in the silent phase, if you will, trying to identify a number of individuals who in this next 6 months would be willing to make such a commitment to some part of the association. We're looking at a multi-year, we haven't finalized whether it be 3 years or a little bit longer, where we're trying to raise 300 individuals during that period who will make commitments, 100 at 25, 100 at 50, and 100 at 100. And individuals would define how they want to set that up based on their personal financial situation and legal situation, and to designate it for the part of the association that they have valued and worked with and care about mostly. So we're hoping to be successful.
Microphones.
And I will be involved. And I will make such a commitment.
Microphone.
Ooh, I said it here. I have to do it now. So.
Microphone six.
Mario Gonzalez, Counselor at Large. As a member of BARC and immediate past chair of BARC, I want to emphasize and confirm Jim Neal's comment that BARC was involved at every point in the discussions of the Neal Schuman acquisition, and we had many deliberations at each of our four annual meetings concerning that issue. And as Clara Bora mentioned, we made the recommendation to the executive board. I want to emphasize that because, as you all know, BARC is the financial committee for this body, and many of the questions that came up on the listserv and here in conference were questions that we did ask thoroughly at every one of our meetings, so there was a full participation of BARC in the acquisition.
Thank you. Microphone seven.
Thank you. Sean Reinhart, Chapter Counselor, California Library Association. Just want to go back to the total ALA expenses on page three of the handout for a moment. In your presentation, which was very thorough, and I thank you for it, you mentioned that under the operating category, which was $6.7 million in 2011, that included benefits. I'm curious to know what percentage of that category is for benefits.
I'm going to turn to Greg Calloway with Council's permission to provide that number to you. I don't have those details in front of me.
Microphone six.
Allow me to provide you a slightly different reference point on benefits in terms of expenses, because I know this number better than the number that you're asking. Total payroll related expenses, benefits are 25% of our payroll expenses. So for every dollar that a staff person earns, we are paying medical, life insurance, and other benefits as a part of that. The 2011 number is a little bit distorted because we have some transfers coming that really offset the total general administrative expense. But I think the real handle for your question is that benefits are 25% of our salaries, if that helps.
Microphone seven.
Thank you. So if I could just clarify then, for a $20.9 million payroll, then that benefit number would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $4
million? That is correct.
Thank you.
Microphone five.
I'm sorry, I've been trying to figure out how to phrase this in my head.
Could you identify yourself, please?
Oh, sorry. Sarah Smith, Counselor at Large. I was wondering how the ALA acquisition of Neal Schuman will affect libraries and who are already have contracts with Neal Schuman.
Great. It will have no impact whatsoever. All existing contracts were honored, and part of the due diligence was just making sure that we had a good, detailed understanding of all of the various agreements in place.
All right, thank you.
Great.
Seeing no one else at the microphone, I don't know if someone's moving to the microphone. No. Seeing no one else at the microphone, Jim, would you want to go on with the next part of your report? This is ALA Council Document 13, and Jim will present the FY 2013 programmatic priorities for your consideration. Jim?
It is the responsibility of Council to affirm the programmatic priorities as the new budget planning process proceeds. So in Document 13, you see those programmatic priorities requiring Council action, and we will display them on the screen. And therefore, I move the ALA Council approve the following programmatic priorities in line with the ALA Ahead to 2015 strategic plan and as a guide in the preparation of the fiscal year 2013 budget. You see them listed there.
Would you read them, please, Jim?
Would I read them?
Just read them, please, yes.
I will read them. Diversity, equitable access to information and library services, education and lifelong learning, intellectual freedom, advocacy for libraries and the profession, literacy, organizational excellence.
Is there any discussion? Seeing no one at the microphone, then we will proceed to a vote. Would all those in favor please raise one of your hands? Will all those opposed please raise one of your hands? Are there any abstentions? The motion passes. Mark your ballot, CD number 13, Programmatic Priorities.
I want to conclude by commending the extraordinary team of financial staff we have to work with at ALA. It would be impossible for the board, for the Finance and Audit Committee, and for BARC to do its work well without the support, the camaraderie, and the professionalism of the staff at ALA. I want to cite in particular Greg Calloway, Keith Brown, Elaine Klimek, Joanne Pack, Jennifer Tam, and Russ Swadowski. This is a team of financial professionals who care so much about this association, and it translates into the extraordinary support we get for our budget and finance work. So thank you to the ALA staff.
Thank you very much.
That concludes
Jim,
my report.
For a very full and rich report. The chair directs you now to ALA Council Document Number 17 and calls upon Councilor John A. Moorman, Chair of the Policy Monitoring Committee, to present the report. John?
Thank you. You have in front of you Council Document CD Number 17, a reminder to councilors that the role of the Policy Monitoring Committee is to take actions of the previous council session that are appropriate to be placed in the policy manual and recommend to council where that those actions should be placed. I would like to ask a courtesy from council that I do not have to read all of these action items in detail because they are rather lengthy. We did a lot of work at annual conference. You have it in front of you, and so what is your pleasure?
Everybody's any objection to not reading? Everyone has the document? Just a minute. Microphone number two.
Alexia Hudson, Pennsylvania Chapter Counselor. We have a colleague who is visually impaired.
Right.
And so I would like to make sure that he has the ability to be able to read or see
exactly
the documents independently.
Exactly.
So
we're aware of that. And because this document was sent out, I understand that he has access to it. But can you just confirm that for me? Yes. I'm seeing a shaking head. Yes. Okay. Yes, thank you. It is something we are aware of, and we're going to make sure that if it's anything that it has not been sent out in advance, that we read all of these aloud. So without objection, then, John, go ahead.
Okay, action item number one. Based on 2010 through 2011, Council Document 16.1, Endowment Trustees Report, Exhibit 13, ALA Annual Conference 2011, submitted by the ALA Treasurer and the Endowment Trustees, approved by the ALA Council. The Policy Monitoring Committee moves that Policy 8.5.1 be revised to read. And what you see there in the bold print are the additions that occurred from actions at council. So I make that motion.
Is there any discussion? Seeing no one at the microphone, then will all those in favor please raise one of your hands? Thank you. All those opposed, raise one of your hands. Thank you. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, CD number 17, item 1.
Thank you. Action item number 2. Based on council document number 45, recommendation 3.2, ALA Annual Conference 2011, submitted by the Presidential Task Force for Improving the Effectiveness of ALA's Council, approved by the ALA Council, PMC moves at policy 5.3, Council Resolutions, Guidelines for Preparation of Resolutions to Council, provision number 6 of the content section, and provision number 1 of the process section be revised to read.
Is there any discussion? Seeing no one at the microphone, we'll move to a vote. Would all those in favor please raise one of your hands? Thank you. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot, CD number 17, item 2.
Action item number 3. Based on council document number 45, recommendation 5.1, ALA Annual Conference 2011, submitted by the Presidential Task Force for Improving the Effectiveness of ALA Council, approved by the ALA Council, PMC moves at policy 5.5.2, council/executive board/membership information session, and policy 7.4.10, membership meetings, be revised as follows.
Is there any discussion? Seeing no one at the microphones, we'll move to a vote. All those in favor, please raise one of your hands. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. Thank you. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, CD number 17, item 3.
And I would note in closing that one item that I put on the draft report that did not get into the council document was an extreme expression of thank you to Lois Ann Gregory for her work in assisting the work of this committee and making it possible. Thank you.
And thank you. Thank you very much for your work, too, John, in chairing this committee and for your committee. I now direct you to ALA Council Document Number 10, and again call upon Councillor John Moorman, Chair of the ALA Policy Manual Revision Task Force, to present his report. Jim?
You have in front of you ALA Council Document Number 10. Councillors have seen this before. I did send it out as Chair of the Task Force to make sure that all members of council were aware of the work that your task force is doing and also the draft of where we are in our work at the present time. A couple of things I would like to highlight on this report. One is, as we organized our work, the task force early on decided that one item in the charge was beyond our scope, given the nature of the task at hand and the time allotted to its completion. This was, quote, verification that policies reflect actual practice, end of quote. If we took this on, we'd be here forever. Another area that I want to emphasize is that section 6.4 of the old ALA policy manual will be removed and placed in an appendix. This section contains the operating agreement between ALA and its divisions. The task force felt that as such, it should have a separate place in the document. It is also noticed, and I emphasize this, that this section has not been addressed in any way by the task force. What I would like to do in closing is emphasize we are continuing our work. You will see our work on ALA Connect. Please look at it. please make any comments to me or any members of the task force, because our goal is to complete our work at annual and bring to you a new policy manual for your action. Are there any questions?
Seeing no one at the microphone, we're ready to proceed. Oh, you don't have no votes, sorry. Thank you very much, John, for your work and task force work, too. The chair now directs you to ALA Council document number 27 and calls upon Jim Reddick, chair of the Committee on Organization, to present the report. Jim?
Thank you, Madam President. Good morning, Council. A very brief report with only one action item from CU, and that is CU's response to a request from AASL's Educators of School Librarians section to add a non-voting member to the composition of the ALA Committee on Education. This has been discussed with the Committee on Education. It has their support. There is also precedent for this. There are other representatives from ELISE and from ACRL and from LearnRT, formerly CLEAN, for those of you with long memories. All of them have non-voting representatives to the committee. And therefore, resolved that the ALA Council amends the composition of the Committee on Education by adding a non-voting representative from the AASL Educators of School Librarians section.
Is there any discussion on the report? If there is no discussion, we'll proceed to the vote. Will all those in favor please raise one of your hands? Thank you. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, CD number 27.
The second page of the report is strictly an information item to let you know that enough signatures have been collected to create the Library Boing Boing member initiative group. One of the interesting things about this is there was such interest in signing this petition that people who weren't ALA members and who found out the only way they could sign the petition and have their signature count became members. I encourage the creation of more such member initiative groups.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you, Council.
I now direct you to ALA Council document number 22 and call upon Kenton L. Oliver, president of the Freedom to Read Foundation, to present his report. Kent?
Good morning, Madam President. It's a pleasure to be with you folks this morning to report on the activities of the Freedom to Read Foundation. I will not read the document verbatim for you, but I would like to pick out a few high points. The first item in your report, the strategic plan. We are thrilled that the board adopted the Freedom to Read Foundation strategic plan at our meeting on Friday. We believe that this will push us forward. It's a plan that's been in process for about a year and a half. But we do believe that this is a way to secure the future of our foundation. As you know, that the Freedom to Read Foundation is the First Amendment defense arm of the American Library Association, and as such, we play a very critical role and many of the core value areas that the association believes so strongly in. We have listed the five critical action areas of the strategic plan in the report: awareness, litigation, education, engagement, and capacity building. And many of these are similar to what is going on in the American Library Association as well. At this meeting, we had John Kraska report to us. His firm, Associate Direct, has been doing some work regarding membership and directing us in some specific ways based on survey results. And over the next year, I expect that we will be making some significant membership initiatives to expand the membership of the association. When it comes to the strategic plan, it was a process that many people had involvement in. And what I'd like to specifically thank your Executive Director, Keith, for his involvement in assisting Barbara Jones and myself as we put the final touches on the plan. As far as engaging in litigation, you can see that there are a number of items represented in your report, and I will not go through those in detail, but they are important First Amendment issues that we hope you will take some time to read your report and become familiar with those, because they are the type of issues and core values that we as librarians put forth that are very important to our day-to-day work. There are also some other litigation issues that we are monitoring, although we are not involved in those issues per se directly in the court, and they are listed under monitoring litigation defending the freedom to read. It's interesting that what we're starting to see are a number of cases that relate back to the Children's Internet Protection Act decision and the interpretation by the courts of what was found in that particular case. The Judith Krug Fund is worth mentioning. The list of the libraries that received the grant from the Judith Krug Fund for Banned Books Week programming is listed on page 5. I think it is interesting to note that in previous years when it came to Banned Books Week, we were seeing about 800 media placements for Banned Books Week. And this year, after a couple of years of providing grants for Banned Books Week programs through this fund, we saw over 2,000 media placements regarding Banned Books Week. So we think that this is having a significant impact upon our media relations and the attention that is drawn to banned books. I did want to briefly mention on the last page of your report the FTRF author event last night, simply because it was so much fun. Actually, we had young adult author John Green speak over at the Dallas Public Library. And the thing that was significant, I felt, about this particular event was that we had about 200 people there in an auditorium that was built for about 170. And I'm guessing that 150 of the people there were probably between the ages of 12 and 15 female groupies of John Green. But they were also groupies of Intellectual Freedom and the Freedom to Read Foundation. And for myself, it reminded me of why I'm a librarian, why I think intellectual freedom is so important. And it was reassuring to understand that so many young adults find that intellectual freedom is a significant issue for them. And if there was any question of it, several times the Patriot Act was mentioned and there was audible hissing from the children. So, and in summarizing, I would just like to make sure and draw attention to the great staff that support the Freedom to Read Foundation, Barbara Jones, Jonathan Kelly, Deborah Caldwell Stone, and Angela Maycock. As we mentioned about the finance staff earlier, the staff for Freedom to Read and OIF are spectacular, and we couldn't do it without them. Are there questions?
Are there any questions for Mr. Oliver? Microphone 7.
Hi, Kelly Zernike, ALA Counselor at Large. I just wanted to agree with the event last night. The Freedom to Read Foundation absolutely rocked that event. John Green was the perfect speaker and really expressed his support numerous times to the Freedom to Read Foundation for the support that they give him. And the teens that were there were just so pumped and excited about reading and exactly like you said, intellectual freedom issues. So it was very great to be there and be a part of. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will get in trouble with Jonathan Kelly if I do not remind you, if you are not a member of the Freedom to Read Foundation, we have your membership forms on the back. And good.
Microphone 5.
Sarah Smith, Counselor at Large and former token student member of council. I was wondering, I first want to thank you for what you are doing for informational freedom, and I was wondering if you considered offering free memberships to library school students in order to increase membership. I know the Federal and Armed Services Library Roundtable offered free student membership, and their numbers shot through the roof. $10 doesn't seem like a lot of money to us, but when you're a starving library school student working an unpaid internship, it's a significant amount.
We have done that in the past. Actually, we've been doing that for the last few years, and I believe we're going to continue to look at it some more and whether or not for new people coming that entered into the profession. So we totally agree with what you're talking about there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Microphone number three.
Jim Neal, ALA Treasurer, Member of Council and Executive Board. I'm also a member of the Freedom to Read Foundation Board, and I'm chairing the nominating committee process this year. We will be electing new members of the board, and I would be interested in hearing from anyone here who's a member of the Freedom to Read Foundation who would be interested in standing as a candidate for the board, or who would like to recommend to me somebody who should be included on the ballot. So please be in touch with me. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no one else at the microphone, thank you very much, Kent.
Okay, thank you.
We're close to the end, but so I'd like to get a sense of whether council wants a break or whether you'd like to just keep moving forward. Take a break. All right. do we need to take a break? Well, let me put it this way. If you look at the agenda, you see that the new business item that's on it is deferred until tomorrow. So all we have left on it, on the agenda, is the honorary membership nominations and vote and announcements. So the question is, if people want a break, I feel we have to let people take a break because they're going to go out of the room anyway if they need to. So again, should we take a break? All right, microphone five.
Rhonda Putney-Gould, ALS Division Counselor. I just snuck out for a break, and the women's room here to the left is without water. Just an FYI.
All right, we're going to take a vote here. I hope this is not the most controversial thing that we do today, and I hope we don't have to debate it all day, but could we see hands of the people who would like to take a break? I think you may lose this one. And all those who do not want to take a break. Okay, we'll talk fast. How about that? So, with your permission, we can move on to the next item. That is the consideration of the ALA honorary membership nominations. I would like to review the procedures once again that we will follow during the portion of the agenda. These procedures were sent to you via the ALA Council electronic list on January 6, 2012, and are available in ALA Council document number 24 through 24.2. There are two nominations being presented to you today. Council will be given an opportunity to discuss the nominations. If Council indicates that it wishes to hold a debate on the merits of the candidate, Council will move into closed session in accordance with ALA Open Meeting Policy 7.4.4, which stipulates that discussion of matters affecting the privacy of individuals be held in closed session. All observers and members of the press will be asked to vacate the room. Please note that we do not need to move into closed session in order to hear comments in support of the nomination. At this point, I would like to ask if any counselor wishes to debate the nomination. If so, please raise one of your hands. I see no hand raised. The chair now calls upon Roberta A. Stevens, ALA Immediate Past President, to present for your consideration the ALA Executive Board's nominations for honorary membership in ALA.
Honorary membership is the highest honor this association can bestow upon an individual. Honorary membership may be conferred on a living citizen of any country whose contribution to librarianship or a closely related field is so outstanding that it is of lasting importance to the advancement of the whole field of library science. It is intended to reflect honor upon the American Library Association, as well as upon the individual. The criteria for honorary membership are: the person should be so outstanding that there can be no question about his or her suitability. The designation should recognize the contribution of an individual per se, rather than that of an individual representing the accomplishments of many. The person elected to honorary membership should be of such caliber as to reflect honor upon the American Library Association by this designation. Honorary membership should be conferred because of a contribution of more than passing interest and of more than local or regional achievement. The contribution may be to librarianship or to a closely related field. The recipient may be a librarian or a person in a related field. In accordance with Bylaw Article Number 1, Section 1A7, and Policy 2.1, the ALA Executive Board voted to nominate two outstanding individuals for recognition and election by Council to honorary membership today. They are Senator Jack Reed and Dr. Betty J. Turok. Biographical information on each of the nominees is provided in ALA Council Documents Number 24 through 24.2. I now present for your consideration the name of Senator Jack Reed. Jack Reed is nominated for this continuing, unwavering, effective support of libraries in the U.S. Congress. On behalf of the ALA Executive Board, I move that an honorary membership be bestowed upon Senator Jack Reed.
Is there any discussion of this motion? If there is no discussion, then we will proceed to the vote. Will all those in favor please raise one of your hands? Thank you. Will all those opposed please raise one of your hands? Thank you. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, Jack Reed.
I now present for your consideration the name of Dr. Betty J. Turok. Betty Turok is nominated in recognition of her outstanding commitment and achievement in the field of library and information science as a practitioner, educator, advocate, and philanthropist. Her efforts have improved the field's focus on diversity, innovation, leadership, and access for all. On behalf of the ALA Executive Board, I move that an honorary membership be bestowed upon Betty J. Turok.
Is there any discussion? Seeing no one at the microphone, we will proceed to a vote. Would all those in favor please raise one of your hands? Thank you. Will all those opposed please raise one of your hands? Thank you. Please mark your ballots. The motion passes, excuse me. Please mark your ballot, Betty J. Turok. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Past President Stevens. I now call upon Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary to the Council, for announcements. Keith?
As one of those who voted for a break, you can be sure of very short announcements. The registration as of the end of the day yesterday stood at 6,249 attendees and 3,686 exhibitors for a grand total of 9,935 attendees. And that compares with 11,009 at the same time in San Diego and 12,221 at the same time in Boston the previous year. We have received an additional petition for Councillor Lard. Councillor at Lard. That is it. Oh boy. All I can say is we should have had the break. All right. So, and that would be Candy Wee, who is the branch manager of the Millgate Liberty. Millbrae Library, pardon me, San Mateo County Library, Millbrae Library in Millbrae, California. Great. Again, Sandy Wee. Okay, great. Please be reminded that the Executive Board Candidates Forum will be held in this room immediately following the adjournment of this council meeting. The forum gives council members an opportunity to hear the views and to ask questions of the Executive Board candidates prior to voting. The candidates' bios and statements of concern are now available at the document pickup station for your convenience. And you may pick your ballots up immediately following the forum. The ballots and the ballot box will remain in the council room today from 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. The balloting will then continue in the ALA office area at table number 13 until 7:30 p.m. This evening. We invite you to please participate in the election.
Thank you, Keith. Please pass your assigned voting cards to the aisles for collection. Please make certain that your name appears on your card. Cards without names will be voided. Microphone number two.
Hello, everybody. Alexia Hudson, Pennsylvania Chapter Counselor. Very quick, because I know people want the break. The Chapter Counselors Forum is taking place today, 4 to 5:30 p.m., Omni Hotel, Dallas C, like Cat. Kathy Parson, Iowa Chapter Counselor, and I are facilitating.
Thank you. Microphone seven.
Jenny Emanuel, Council at Large. I have no voice, sorry. The Early Career Librarians Caucus is going to be meeting at 6 p.m. in the council suite in the Omni. So anybody that's interested in early career issues, please come. Thanks.
Do you have the council suite number? Does somebody?
It's in the Hyatt.
26 in
Hyatt.
2628 in the Hyatt.
All right. See you there.
Microphone seven.
I think he was.
All right. Microphone six. Sorry.
Mario Gonzalez, Councilor at Large. I just want to point out the resolution that was postponed till tomorrow has been distributed on a blue sheet of paper. It's been revised. Please read it because there are considerable changes. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone seven.
Gina Persicini, Idaho Chapter Councilor. And I just wanted to remind all councilors that there is a council forum tonight in the Omni in the Arts District 4 room. If you have any items that you would like to bring up for discussion, you can bring them to me or to the co-convener, Rodney, who's over on the other side of the room. And please, if you have something that you want, a handout or something, please bring copies for the room. And if you do plan to have a handout, please, please, please try to send it ahead of time electronically so those that are using digital devices to read can review it before the forum. Thank you.
Thank you. That's it. If there are no objections, I declare the second meeting of the ALA Council adjourned. Thank you.